From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder is telling the American Bar Association meeting in San Francisco today that we cannot simply prosecute or incarcerate our way to becoming a safer nation. In a bit, we'll check in on what the state of Kentucky is already doing to bring down its prison population.
But first, more of what's behind Holder's move. Laws passed in the 80s meant the same amount of jail time for possession of 5 grams of crack cocaine, more common in poor black neighborhoods, as 500 grams of white cocaine powder, used more by whites. Holder says the system is unjust, but what else is going on here? Sari Horowitz covers the Justice Department for The Washington Post. Sari, first of all, people want to know, with Eric Holder unveiling this new policy on arrests, are more people with nonviolent offenses going to be getting out of jail right away?
Well, a lot of the details are still up in the air about what's going to happen exactly right now. But what we do know is that the Attorney General of the United States has announced today that too many Americans go to too many prisons for too long and for no good law enforcement reasons. And he's announcing this comprehensive prison reform package to make really some huge changes in this criminal justice system.
Well, give us some of the changes.
Well, one of the most important changes is the Attorney General is saying that low-level nonviolent drug offenders who don't have ties to gangs or cartels or large-scale organizations are not going to be charged with these offenses that impose and require severe mandatory sentences, for example, 10 years for a low-level amount of drugs. And our prisons are filled with these what are called low-level offenders. If you look at the statistics of our prisons, they're stunning. The United States population since 1980 has increased by about a third, but the prison population has grown by about 800%. Mm. Our prisons are nearly 40% over capacity.
Mm. You give another stat from the Justice Department that the U.S. has only 5% of the world's population, but a quarter of the world's incarcerated population. So tell us more about what the Attorney General proposes, because some of these things he can do, some he can ask states to do. As we're about to hear, some states are already doing, and then we recently saw a report out of Los Angeles, which Los Angeles police officers were told that 91 violations that previously had been considered infractions, they shouldn't be charging people with anymore. So it seems as if cities and states are maybe even ahead on this, or deciding not to prosecute certain things. So what is he proposing?
Yes, the states have really already jumped into this debate and have already made significant changes. What the Attorney General is doing is he's giving instructions to his federal prosecutors. There are 94 U.S. attorneys across the country. He's telling them how they should write their criminal complaints when charging low-level drug offenders to avoid triggering the mandatory minimum sentences. So, for example, if there's a defendant accused of, conspiring to sell 5 kilograms of cocaine, that would normally set off a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence. And now the prosecutor would be told, don't write that up with those specifics. Just say that the defendant conspired to distribute cocaine without saying how much. That's a big change.
Yeah. Well, what's been the reaction to this?
It's interesting. I'm getting a lot of reaction today, as you can imagine. I just heard from Julie Stewart, who is the president of an organization called Families Against Mandatory Minimums. And here's what she says. It's clear that the politics are finally catching up with the evidence. The Attorney General is saying that in the case of many nonviolent offenders, shorter sentences will actually make us safer because resources will be freed up to target the truly dangerous. His point is that punishment works, but excessive punishment backfires, and he's right. Now, Julie also points out that these are, in her opinion, modest changes, minor tweaks compared to major overhauls that, as you just said, we're seeing at the state level. But Julie says they would be a great step in the right direction, and they have bipartisan support and should be acted on immediately.
Well, there is bipartisan support, but are you also hearing criticism?
You know, I think we're going to hear more criticism as the day goes on, but mostly I've been hearing applause and praise for the Attorney General.
Well, and the Justice Department is pointing out that conservatives like Jeb Bush and Newt Gingrich have been calling for change in prison policy. So we'll be, as you said, hearing more. Sari Horowitz,
that's right.
Yep, Justice Department reporter for The Washington Post. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, one state that has a little bit of experience doing the kinds of things Eric Holder is proposing is Kentucky. It passed House Bill 463 in 2011 to reduce the prison population. Joining us now to discuss this is J. Michael Brown, Secretary of Justice and Public Safety in Kentucky. Mr. Secretary, welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy. Glad to be with you.
Well, let's talk about what you have done in Kentucky with House Bill 463. Tell us about that.
In 2008, the Pew Center on the States published a report indicated that Kentucky had, at that time, the fastest growing by percent prison population in the country. And it was not only having a tremendous effect on our budget, it was also an indicator that we didn't need to be first in that particular category. Kentucky passed a bill virtually unanimously in 2011, which was House Bill 463, which addressed issues of reentry and how we approached our drug laws.
And what's been the effect of what you did?
The most notable effect right now has been that, for instance, a year ago, our prison population was 22,118. That's a year ago today. And today it was 19,899. Hmm. That's a drop of 2,219. When you estimate a little over $20,000 a year, and that's a conservative estimate to house inmates, that starts adding up to real dollars.
Obviously, the flip side to that is that some people might say there are more criminals on the streets these days because of that.
Everything we did, and with the help of the Pew Center, was all based on evidence-based practices. They gave us metadata analysis from across the country. And what we had looked at is how do we, particularly from my position in the executive branch, how do we cut recidivism and prevent our return customers from coming back? And then how do we do programs that will intervene with the largest number of the people coming into the system, and those were ones involved in either drug or drug-related crimes. Our crime rate had been flat. Our Part 1 crime rate is still down in Kentucky. We were dealing with the individuals that we knew we could have a positive effect on, and that's what we've done.
One of the things that House Bill 463 did was to change the zone around schools.
Well, the previous law had been 1,000 yards, and in some of our urban areas, there was almost no place that was not within 1,000 yards of either a school or a park or the other places that were prohibited. What you found were people who had been charged being within those zones who were not truly trafficking or doing anything with the intent of trafficking at a school, which is clearly what the intent of the law was. We brought that perimeter down to be more in control with the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, which is now 1,000 feet.
You also changed the amount of, for example, cocaine that would be needed to be sold in order for somebody to get a high level of jail time.
Kentucky's drug law did not contain any metrics in it at all. So cocaine was cocaine, whether you had what some people would call to be just residue or whether you had several grams of it. What we did was, in Kentucky, our issues really boiled down to three generic categories: marijuana, something you could measure in weight, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, which are typically measured in grams, and in prescription pills, which we chose the term dosage, meaning pills, because that's how they are, since they are pharmaceutically produced, that's how they are delivered on the street. 463, for the first time, put dosages and metrics into our drug law so we could clearly distinguish between the person who is the trafficker versus the person who is a peddler, meaning he's sharing drugs with other people involved in the culture, and people who are simply addicted.
What else did the bill do?
Statistics have shown that individuals, when they are released from prison, released from incarceration, they are most likely to offend and recidivate within the first 6 to 9 months after coming out of prison. We had had a population that was coming out with basically no handoff, no transition between the institution and society. We instituted a program that called for the last 6 months of those individual sentences to be under supervised release under the supervision of our Division of Probation and Parole. And to date, We have had almost 6,000 individuals do their last 6 months under that supervision. 81% of them have not offended during that period of time, which was a great improvement over where we had been before, and it saved about $18.5 million.
How many people do you think are in Kentucky prisons today that probably should not be there if you were to update the sentencing?
I think if we updated our sentencing and were able to retroactively apply it, which I don't know is legally possible, that we could certainly reduce our prison population by 5,000 to 7,000.
Hmm. And are you thinking all of drug offenders in those cases?
Well, we have drug offenders, we have property offenders, and then we've had certain situations. We call it persistent felony offender laws. People will repeat offenders. For instance, you might have a drug crime and then another crime that goes with it. They really are singular. So you had a burglary and you had a drug charge. These things got enhanced, what we call enhanced punishments, which lengthened your sentence and gave you much more mandatory time. General Holder has talked about that in the federal system. That effect has kept some people in prison, I think, longer than they really need to be. The evidence shows that more prison time does not necessarily reduce the recidivism rate. It's just more time.
We're talking with J. Michael Brown, the Secretary of Justice and Public Safety in Kentucky, about that state's effort to reduce the prison population. In a moment, we'll ask what public reaction has been like in Kentucky.
But also on our radar, Elon Musk, the brainy billionaire behind PayPal and Tesla Motors, has a new concept in high-speed travel. It's called the Hyperloop, and he's unveiling that this afternoon. Also, the decision by a suburban Birmingham school district to eliminate busing has erupted into controversy. School officials say they were forced because of a budget shortfall, but some people think it's to force minority and low-income students out of the area. These and other stories later today on All Things Considered. Back in a minute with more of Jeremy's conversation, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.